Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The American economy at year's end. The Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, in the Wall Street Journal, has many remarks about what went wrong, but also looking to the future, extremely positive. The line that I take most sensitive to the rhetoric of presidential administrations, times can be tough, but Americans are tougher. From the depths of the crisis, we have bounced back, and the president's economic plan has bolstered the U.S. economy's resilience to today's global challenges. I welcome my colleague, Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing most recently at Defining Ideas for the Hoover about Janet Yellen's column, among other thoughts at year's end. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The secretary refers to the president's economic plan. What was it? What is it? Because I thought so much of it was elbowed aside when he did not win through his Build Back Better legislation. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, I don't think he has an economic plan. There are a series of initiatives dealing mainly with the energy sector, which is designed to suppress its operation, both in the production and the distribution of energy. And the specific thing that Ms. Yellen mentions in her op-ed is that they managed to release 180 million barrels of oil from the oil reserves. That's not a plan. Essentially, what happens is if you want to increase production, you can't do it by reducing capital reserve. So she's taking some of stuff out today, and he's going to have to put it back tomorrow. And this is a zero. So the plan seems to be to try to convert energy as fast as possible in a reckless fashion, in my view, to solar on the one hand and to wind on the other, and to do everything you can to suppress the production of fossil fuels through fracking and other kinds of devices. And then the rest of this particular plan says we don't wish to create any pollution, even though we're very good at drilling and get more unit out for benefit for any amount of pollution that we create. So we'll let everybody else in the world do it pretty please and let them get monopoly rents as we manage to stand aside. This plan has been criticized from the beginning, and it turns out the president is utterly oblivious to the thing. He can point to, and I think has tried to say, that the price of oil had gone down, but that the same forces, i.e. market forces that drove it up a couple of months ago, are the ones that are bringing it down today. And it may well be that part is a slack in demand by virtue of the fact that people are anticipating a recession. If you're trying to figure out what the general health of the economy is by looking at the stock market, you better look the other way. Things have been going down pretty consistently. And that's because there's an estimation that many of these businesses that we have are not going to be as profitable as they once were. A year ago, people were saying that the tech industry was completely vulnerable. Nobody could do anything to a company like Google or Meta, Facebook, whatever you wish to call it and the like. You look at every one of these stocks and they're all down by between 25 and 75%. Well, there is an economic plan that's afoot by the president on that, and that's to hound every corporation you can through environmental laws, through securities laws, through FTC and antitrust laws, to the point where, in fact, the actions that are threatened are so unprecedented and so enormous that the market responds by reducing the price value of these kinds of companies. We'll just take the FTC, for example. What it seems to do is to say every time we stop a merger, we've managed to compete a good deed. What they've done, and we know what the losses are, which is they basically destroyed stock value for two companies. What they can't point to is what the gains are on the other side. They make some sort of abstract reference to the fact that it's going to be a more competitive market, but that's mainly a dubious kind of proposition because a competitive market allows mergers to take place if the new firms are better competitors than the constituent firms out of which they were formed. So there is a plan of sort that's in place, and it's an utterly disastrous one. And energy is the place where it starts, but it's going to spread throughout the economy because there's no sense here as to how to deal with the rest of the issues There's no plan to reduce taxes. There's also another factor which she did not mention, which is the Biden administration is strongly aligned with progressive states like California and New York, which are also doing major damages to the economy. That's less fatal because the exit option remains as against state regulation, where it doesn't as against federal regulation. But the cumulative effect is nonetheless there. So the basic prediction that people are going to make on the economic front is that these are all opportunities lost. What we need is what we've always needed: less regulation, more deregulation, let people return to the competitive processes, and every major government agency to which Ms. Yellen refers is going in the opposite direction. I'm sorry to say, but she doesn't sound to me like an independent intellectual force when she makes these remarks. She sounds like she's an apparatchik saying exactly what the president wants to say. And if there's one thing I always dislike in cabinet officials, is watching them toady up to the president of the United States to do his bidding and to show no independent judgment whatsoever. It's true of her, and it's certainly been true of people like Merrick Garland. It is not a sign of a well-functioning administration if it turns out key cabinet officials turn into yes men.
There is blame shifting in the secretary's essay, as you identify in your defining ideas piece. One is the energy story driven by the invasion of Ukraine and the worldwide contraction underway now, perhaps because of the war, perhaps it was always there after the pandemic. But the pandemic is the other explanation the secretary offers for the tough road we've been on. Is the pandemic, to your understanding, now solved by the Biden administration? Because there's a mixed opinion as to whether it's over or not.
I think the Biden administration from day one has absolutely been clueless about everything that's associated with the pandemic and its operation. I mean, for a very long period of time, they were telling you to wear a mask outside for 100 days and we'll solve this problem. The silliness of that proposal, I mean, it should be self-evident. When you're outside, you want to be breathing in fresh air, not breathing in your own waste products. The idea that this would somehow or other stop the spread of the virus is, I think, really quite odd. Many of the other devices, including various kinds of lockdowns, restrictions, and quarantines, all of those, by and large, have been a complete waste of time. Many of these spreads take place inside the family or at home, and that the kinds of things that we put here have not stopped the spread of the virus. They don't get stopped by masks. They don't get stopped by separation, at least part-time. It turns out that the collateral damages that you have in other industries have been enormous, so that the lockdown has resulted in the shutdown of medical facilities. It has resulted in the shutdown of construction projects of one kind or another. It has resulted in the shutdown of educational institutions. All of this, I think, has an enormous negative effect upon the system, and very little effect with respect to the vaccine, very little with respect to the virus. His vaccine program is a mistake. If you look at the latest VAERS number, which stands for the vaccine adverse events that have been reported, these are extremely high, over a million or close to a million now. 15,000 deaths from the mRNA violation have been alleged, not proved. And the CDC basically continues to recommend that you take this. And it says that adverse side effects turn out to be, quote unquote, only rare. The evidence is overwhelming that that's not the case. So they managed to mismanage the situation. I would say that the virus is probably concerned with 10% of the losses, and that 90% of the losses come from the way in which the Biden administration in particular has handled this. I don't wish to give high praise to the Trump administration. I think they rushed the mRNA virus vaccine through before it was ready for distribution, and that it contains and continues to contain very many dangerous effects. But let's remember that if you're trying to figure out what's going on, it's been 2 years under Biden and less than a year under Trump. And so if you're trying to figure out where you assign the blame, you have to put it on the dominant actions by the most recent actor. And so what happens is she's very good at making excuses. And at no point does she actually point out what he did constructively with respect to the way in which you wanted to handle the vaccine type of situation. And so I think, in effect, that the statements here are really extremely idle. And it's kind of sad that what happens is an administration in the face of an impending recession, a stock market collapse, a lack of confidence in our economic institutions, starts to sound so Pollyannish when every piece of data comes out the other way. It was quite remarkable that her article managed to attract over 2,500 comments, of which 99% of them were completely negative. She sounds fatuous. She does not sound serious.
And Richard, in the year coming up, the big piece of the Build Back Better plan that was not acted upon was a change in the taxes that have been in effect since 2017. Do you expect the Biden administration to go back to Congress and ask for tax hikes across the board, especially on the well-to-do?
I don't know if they will do that. I think people become to realize that this is a fool's game. It's striking, for example, that Governor Hochul in the state of New York is fighting back her progressives who want to tax the rich who will only leave. It's also pretty clear in retrospect that the 2017 tax cuts did raise all boats. If you increase basically investment, you will increase wages as a complementary good, and that's what they were trying to do. So if they go back to the bad old days, they will raise revenues in the short run, but they will produce a reduction in production in the long run, which will turn reduce the size of the tax base. I don't know whether he's a glutton for punishment. Nothing would amaze me about it, but I don't think that's likely. The other thing I think that's not likely is my guess is that the student loan program, which may be $500 billion worth of money being handed out on not quite a random basis, but I also think that that's not now before the court, and that the moral basis and the legal basis for the program was so weak that it will be struck down, assuming that the court will find that somebody has standing to challenge it. I would hope they would do the latter. It seems to me to be absolutely madness to say here's a program of immense consequence done by an executive official in excess of the authority of Congress, or so it is claimed, and there's nobody in the world who can challenge that, so the court has to let this thing go by. I don't believe they will do that. I've been always been an opponent of the standing doctrine and its restrictive nature. To the extent that somebody is alleging that government action is beyond the scope of its permitted authority, standing should be given to citizens and taxpayers to stop that. Of course, the only thing they're trying to do is to shut down a program. They're not trying to macromanage a program, which is legal, but which I think standing on individual cases is often quite dangerous. So I don't know what this man will do. Generally, I have no confidence in his judgment. And I don't think, in fact, he exercised an independent judgment. I think he's become increasingly more woolly and indefinite in the way in which he goes. He can't face public attention and scrutiny. So the real question is, who are the powers behind the throne that are going to dictate these things? If I knew who they were and what their politics were, I might be able to make a guess. But at this particular point, I see no movement towards deregulation whatsoever in any major substantive area. And certainly if they're going to have any initiatives in tax, I can't believe it's going to be reduced them. I think they're probably going to try to engage in more mischief. But fortunately, I don't have any concrete evidence to point out at this particular time that that is indeed the case.
The secretary mentions inflation as a concern of the administration, and Mr. Powell is supervising the raising of rates sharply over these last months. However, there is politics, always politics, when it comes to raising rates. Do you expect when we reach a point where the unemployment is climbing, Mr. Powell can resist Secretary of Treasury Yellen and President Biden's remarks that you've gone too far, too fast, and ease up? Will we see that contest in the new year?
I think we will see the contest, but I think it's important to understand that the Fed can only do one thing well, which is to control monetary supply. It is utterly useless when it starts to deal with employment. And the way in which you want to deal with the employment process is to look at the market directly and repeal every new single restriction on labor market formation. You want to cut back on the enormous amount of effort that's being put into strengthening unionization everywhere throughout the particular economy. You want to make sure that there are no inhibitions under the anti-discrimination law or anything else that will stop the formation of labor jobs. But this administration, if it's likely to do anything, is to raise the minimum wage, which would be absolute madness. So what you're seeing here is the fact that they're trying to rely on the Fed as a jack of all trades master, when in fact it can't do that stuff. And the direct regulation of the labor market in every area that I've observed, whether it be the antitrust law, the union law, the anti-discrimination law, has been a huge disaster. And what they have to do is to reverse course on that. Remember, when Trump did the deregulation, what happened is the gains tended to concentrate at the bottom of the workforce, not at the top. And if you're going to reverse the situation, that's exactly what's going to happen. You'll take the greatest amount of wealth away from people at the bottom of the pile rather than from the top. And that's going to create another kind of crisis. I have zero confidence in this administration on the way in which to arrange the pieces. What they have to do essentially is to open up the energy supplies, cut back on the COVID regulation, and let labor markets work through voluntary mechanisms rather than through increased government oversight.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution commenting on the Secretary of the Treasury's year-end op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about the economy back on track. The professor refers to a Supreme Court pending oral argument about the student loan, but when we come back, two other significant pending cases to do with social media before the Supreme Court. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.